Marcus Young. How you doing?
Good, Becca.
The Offspring.
How's it going, Becca?
Dave Grohl. How you going, mate?
Good, man.
Pete, it's been a long time coming.
Oh, Becca, hasn't it indeed?
We go inside the dressing room, speak to the biggest names in music.
Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones.
And crack open their esky.
This is exactly how I imagined you, by the way, sitting opposite me with a vodka and orange.
You're a discerning chap.
This is The Rider.
Hey, it's Becca. Welcome back to The Rider. Slightly delayed because, well, I was just a tad hungover on a weekend. So it's a midweek release of The Rider with Becca this week. So excited as the weather warms up. All set for the rest of the year. Plenty of gigs still to come. Of course, waiting for the Foo Fighters and Kiss. And here I was thinking I was going to miss Kiss because I'm going to miss the gig in Sydney and, of course, the AFL Grand Final as well. But I just happen to be in the States when they're playing their tour over there. And just this week, snapped up tickets to see them at the Hollywood Bowl, which is just going to be incredible. I'm actually more excited about going to the Hollywood Bowl than actually seeing Kiss for their final tour. But it's going to be amazing. And of course, they're going to be great at ANZ Stadium in Sydney, or whatever it is called now. But also, while I'm over there, I missed out on tickets, but you two are doing their Ultraviolet 25 shows in a row at the beautiful Sphere, which is at the Venetian. It's going to be just a real visual masterpiece with the, you know, full round screen, surround sound. They're really going to be putting on a show. And I went to look at tickets for the date I'm there, and unfortunately they're all snapped up, apart from the ones that are $1,000 each. So I'm going to have to miss you two this time around. But look, it's going to be a great event in Vegas. Kiss are going to be amazing. Can't wait for the rest of the year. This is The Rider with Becco with a bit of a surprise this week.
Hot potato, hot potato.
Okay, I haven't got the Wiggles, but I have got the OG Red Wiggle, Murray Cook, who is famous for this song, but also he's just a legendary Sydney muso. He's played in a million bands. I've seen him countless times at gigs and is now part of the Soul Movers with this song. And Dumb Luck is the title track of the new album, and funnily enough, it is about driving around Vegas and losing all your money. Murray Cook, the OG Red Wiggle. G'day, Murray.
Hello.
Murray Cook, how are you? Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Pleasure. Good to see you.
So this is your fourth album with the Soul Movers, and you have seriously slotted in with a great bunch of musicians.
Yeah, they're amazing, especially this lineup we've got now. So Lizzie and I got together probably about 8 years ago, and she's a great, amazing singer. I kind of knew her from around the traps because I go to a lot of gigs and stuff, and so did she. We're both over 6 foot tall, so we'd see each other across the room.
Yeah.
And but I didn't really know she sung, and she'd already done a Soul Movers album with Dennis Tech from Radio Birdman, who was her partner at the time. And I heard that, and you know, I was just blown away with her voice, and so I said, let's get together and revive the Soul Movers, and we went from there. And we've been through a few lineups, but yeah, the one we got now is pretty amazing. It's Marco Simic on keys, and Matt Crawford, a young guy from the Illawarra, on bass, and Luke Herbert, who's played with lots of different people, on drums. And yeah, it's just been great, especially this experience of recording the album with those people has just been fantastic.
Well, because you're saying, you know, you go to a lot of gigs, and I've seen you, you know, in Sydney at plenty of gigs over the years. I couldn't even tell you which was the last one, but I got to say, I always bumped into you, you know, in, you know, standing around or at the front or whatever, and you're always friendly, and I was like, oh, there's Murray from the Wiggles. you're a genuine music fan, and I always appreciated that.
Yeah. Well, I grew up with live music. In the 70s, you know, I started seeing bands, and it just became my life. And when I started playing in bands was kind of the early 80s, and that was like a real sort of golden era for live music in Sydney and Melbourne. And you know, I was in a band that weren't very good, but you could get gigs, and you'd go to lots of gigs. All the big bands now that we all love, like, you know, Cold Chisel and Midnight Oil and the Angels, Metal as Anything, all those bands were playing the pubs. You could just go to a Carrying Bar Inn, if anyone from Sydney knows that venue. It's just, you know, it's not like going to see them at a stadium. So it was a really great time, and I just got a passion for it, and just decided that's what I wanted to do.
Well, you mentioned Dennis Tech before. I mean, just to be within 6 degrees of Dennis, I guess, because Radio Birdman was such an influential band as well over the years.
Yeah, they really were. And, you know, that was kind of my era. So to kind of fill his shoes, so to speak, was pretty exciting. And we had Pip Hoyle from Birdman was in the band for a while too, so that was very cool. So there's a real pedigree there, but live music's where it's at for me, and it still is. You know, 10 years after I finished up with the Wiggles, where we toured constantly, probably more than any other Australian band. You know, I'm still out there doing gigs in little venues.
And were you a fan of the Cockroaches before you met the blokes, or you must have seen them, I guess, a few times?
I did. Yeah. Look, I was a fan of them as a live band, particularly. But they had some great songs, and I saw them quite a few times. So when I met up with Anthony at Macquarie Uni when we were doing early childhood teaching, we had a lot in common. You know, we played a lot of the same gigs. They just had a lot more people at their gigs than I had at mine. But it was great. So we really hit it off. So to do a music project after that wasn't that strange, really. Yeah. But it's just where it went was not expected.
Well, I can imagine, did you have a moment when you finally retired from the Wiggles, did you have a moment where you sat down on the couch and had sort of an empty feeling almost because you're so used to being on the road?
Yeah, I did really, and especially the kind of creative side, because I was when I finished touring with the Wiggles, I was playing in a few different bands, but they kind of weren't my bands and I wasn't writing the songs. And so I kind of really needed this. So the Soul Movers came along at a really great time for me. But there was an emptiness. So you can't go from, you know, doing 6 days a week, 10 months of the year to kind of doing nothing. And, you know, at the time we said we retired, but, you know, I'm not going to go out and play golf or something like that. For me, retirement is just throwing myself back into some other music projects.
Well, and you did stay on, I think, as sort of not the roadie, but you were the tour manager for a little while as well. So that's a good way of easing out of it a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, it was a bit. Yeah, look, we needed someone to book the shows and stuff. But after a few months of that, I realised that wasn't really strong suit. So I passed that on. But, yeah, I'm still around behind the scenes a little bit, but not day-to-day, but it's still our business and, obviously take a strong interest in it.
Yeah, well, that obviously made a sort of an easy decision to take a step back. You've got a certain style about you, I've got to say. I mean, I like that British 60s, I guess, is the yeah. High Street.
I respect that.
It's a good look.
Oh, cheers, yeah. Yeah, I kind of came across some of those stripy pants that Brian Jones and Keith Richards used to wear in the late 60s and early 70s. I decided to kind of adopt that look. Yeah, no, not many other people were doing it at the time. So, yeah.
And you are a massive Stones fan, and you you must be excited about the new Stones album, which is announced that it's coming out soon.
Yeah, yeah, it's always great. And I was teasing a bit that they might be coming out again. So, you know, the last time I saw them, they're getting on, but they're really at the height of their powers as a live act. But obviously, we miss Charlie, but I'd love to see them again before they eventually give it up. But this new album, there's quite a bit of Stones influence in there. One of the songs the title track, "Dumb Luck," is I'm playing in open G for guitarists out there. It's Keith's kind of tuning and it's kind of pretty Stonesy little riff. And it creeps in quite often. And Marco, the keyboard player, and I think both of us, Exile on Main Street's our favourite album. So, you can't help but getting it in there.
Well, I can hear definitely hear the Stones influence, the title track. And I guess one thing I've learnt from, you know, studying the Stones is Keith's always said that he's become a better guitar player the older he is, you know, and if he could go back and redo Brown Sugar again, he might make it a little bit different because he's a bit more mature. Have you found you're the same? You're actually a better guitarist these days?
Yeah, absolutely. I just play so much now. I mean, I did through the Wiggles as well, and that was great. But and it's funny because that's kind of crept into when I've done the OG Wiggles shows, because I had a little bit where I kind of got a shredding moment to myself, and that was fun. But yeah, no, I've definitely improved the last sort of 10 or 20 years. I've really improved, and that's good. I think as an older person, you know, you want to keep challenging yourself and getting better, and having more fun as well.
What's the thing? Because you're doing it for the love, not for the money. Because actually, what was your first decent paycheck like from the Wiggles? Did you stare at it and just go, "I can't believe we're doing this"?
Yeah, it was a little bit like that. It was kind of gradual, where we just started putting on our own shows. And when we realized we were making more money than we were making as teachers, we kind of went, hey, this is all right. We're just having fun. But look, there were lots of pinch me moments over the years, you know, touring America where you're playing stadiums and, arenas and playing Madison Square Gardens and all those kinds of things. You know, that was just never, ever, ever in a million years on my radar. As a young man, I just wanted to make music and hopefully make some sort of career of that. It was kind of when I gave up that vision, that's when the Wiggles happened, and it went way beyond anything we could have possibly imagined. But you know, for me, that seems like another lifetime, and because I do love playing, particularly playing live so much, but you know, getting an album together and things like that's really why I do it. And I've kind of realized that even during the Wiggles, you know, we were blessed that we were so successful, but I do it for the love of it, because I love music and I love getting up in front of a crowd and being a goose.
And you recorded this album, was it Studio 301 in Sydney? Is that right?
We did it all over the place. It's funny because it started off as demos. We were just at there's a little rehearsal studio. Well, it's not that little, but it's a rehearsal studio in St. Peter's in Sydney called Zen. And I knew I'd done some recording there before, but we thought, oh, we'll go in there, we'll do some demos. And we just captured something, you know. We're playing together as a band, which we haven't done for the last couple of albums as much. We just did it really live. In fact, a lot of the vocals that Lizzie did live are the actual vocals on the record. And after the first session there, we kind of looked at each other and we're going, these aren't demos. These are like, this is the basis for an album. And yeah, so then we did more stuff at 301. But in sort of June, Lizzie went over to the US because 2 albums ago we recorded it at Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and Memphis, Tennessee, in various studios. And we met a whole bunch of musicians over there, some really great backing singers especially. And we decided together that she'd go over revisit those studios, revisit some of the musicians, and just put a little bit of icing on the cake. So, yeah, it's one of these sort of transcontinental albums that went from scungy little demo studios to some of the great historic studios in the world. And with these fantastic backing singers, there's three African-American women who did the backing vocals on several songs. And that was all recorded at a studio in Memphis called Royal, which is probably our favourite in the world. And it's where Al Green recorded all his early hits. And his producer, Willie Mitchell's son, still runs it. And he's great to work with. So, you know, it's a real joy being able to do that kind of thing. So I think it shows in the album.
Oh, mate, is it ever though? Because this thing, you're just enjoying yourselves and be able to experience the great cities, the great musical cities of the world. And also it's a great tax deduction as well. So you go, hey, it's a work expense.
It's certainly that.
But it also explains why Liz is driving around, you know, Vegas in one clip and then in the streets of Memphis in another clip. Your bit in the film clip is in Botany in front of a few shipping containers playing guitar.
Exactly. Yeah, a couple of us weren't in the video, so we headed down to Botany and Tempe and just did some stuff. It kind of works.
Yeah. Hey, no one would know unless we were speaking about it right now.
Exactly. Also, the other one, Dumb Luck, where she's in Vegas, there's one little shot of me playing the pokey machines, and that's at Coochie Diggers Club.
It's really an incredible bunch of songs, and that's the thing, you're having so much fun. And is it one of those things where if you thought about bringing other people involved, or you got such a great bunch of musos, you're pretty happy with the collaborations you already got?
Well, with this lineup, yeah, we're pretty much happy with what we've got. We have in the past on our last album, Dan Sultan did a duet with us. The one before, we had some musicians in Muscle Shoals called the Swampers, who a lot of people might be aware of. They actually got their name from a Lynyrd Skynyrd song, Sweet Home Alabama. Says Muscle Shoals got the Swampers. But that's we had David Hood and Spooner Oldham from the Swampers, who recorded on, you know, like Aretha Franklin records and Wilson Pickett. right up to like Atlantic Crossing by Rod Stewart and stuff. Like they've been on hundreds and hundreds of hits, and like to play with those guys was just a thrill. And so yeah, we're really open to stuff. We every album seems a bit different, and we approach it in a different way. And this one kind of just evolved really organically, and that's one of the things we love about it.
Well, that's often how the Stones came about new material, and I think this current album was kind of spawned off them being in the studio and getting writer's block, and they subsequently recorded this covers album, you know, Blue and Lonesome, which was
the blues album, yeah.
The blues album, and that was an accident because they were like, oh, nothing's happening here, you know, I'm not feeling it. So they ended up doing one song, and then they did another one, and I think they ended up doing maybe 10, and that became a blues covers album, and that's how this current new album has come about. I'm assuming it's the same for you guys, you just get in the studio and see what happens.
Yeah, look, we do a bit of that. We write in lots of different ways. Lizzie is like, has always got ideas. And part of my job is corralling some of them and turning the ideas into songs. And then, and quite a few of the songs on the album, for the first time, actually, we brought just a real bare bones kind of idea, and the band worked on it. And one of the songs, the song Trucks, it was like that. And it was like really, really simple. But the version that's on the album is like, the second take. It was just everyone just came up with these great parts and really just the vibe of it. And as I said, Lizzie's vocal is often when you're recording, you do a guide vocal. So the singer will just sing a vocal and then replace it later. But we just couldn't capture the vibe of it. So even though there's, you know, the other instruments are all spilling into her mic, so it makes it a bit harder to mix. I wasn't the engineer, so that wasn't my problem. No, Stu Geddes at 301 is a brilliant mixing engineer. And he went, yeah, we could do this. Yeah, so we got the vibe and we got good quality as well.
Well, that's the danger about sort of doing, you know, doing demos in a demo situation, because often you could have versions where they're as good as you're ever going to get, but it's like, oh, no, we didn't use a good microphone, or it's bleeding in, or whatever, and because sometimes you just can't recapture that. It's just the way it is.
No, you really can't. And Lizzie did do some other vocals, and you know, she's great. She's a great singer, and she got close to it, but she just kept saying, "I prefer the guide vocal. It's just better." And there was just a point where I think Marco and I went, "Well, let's just see if we can use the guide vocal. Why sweat it if it's." I think it's really about the performance much more than the sort of sonic qualities. But we kind of got a bit of both. And also, I always hark back to Springsteen with Nebraska, that he recorded that as a demo on a Porter studio, that old four-track cassette, like really, really bad quality. And same thing, he took it to the band and he wasn't happy with the way it turned out, so he released that as the album. It's one of his best records, you know. I think most people listening are listening for the performance much more. I think in the sort of 80s and 90s we got a bit too hung up on you can be perfect, and the whole thing of using click tracks and, with Pro Tools and stuff, you can move things around so it's exact. And we did a little bit of that, but, you know, sometimes mistakes are good, you know. Sometimes the mistakes are what gives it character. Look at us. We're people. We have mistakes on our faces.
Well, that's the whole reason why we go to gigs. You don't want to see a perfect, performance, because you do go to ones and you go, oh, you know what? It's too perfect, because they've got the lighting and everything's synchronized and all that sort of thing. And you just want to see something raw and real and... Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other day because, we lost lovely Ronnie Pino from Guide Pretty recently. And, they were a band that you could go and see. There were times, but, you know, they'd pull it back together. And that was kind of the thrill of it. And, you know, bands like The Beasts and one of those kind of bands, they are like that. And, it's that kind of almost danger, I guess, that is thrilling.
So what bands were you seeing, you know, back in the heyday, sort of 70s and 80s? You mentioned, you know, The Beast of Bourbon. Who else... in the Sydney to Melbourne scenes, were you regularly checking out if you could?
Yeah, well, I saw Hunters and Collectors really early on, and I was a pretty big Midnight Oil fan, as I mentioned before, so I'd go and see them. A band I really loved, I knew a couple of the guys, was The Reels, and a lot of people might have forgotten them now, but Quasimodo's Dream was a brilliant, brilliant single, and they were like really Oddball, great fun. There was like a huge sort of punk scene. There was a band called Secret Secret I used to love, who morphed into the Cruel Sea. So Danny and Ken and Jim from the Cruel Sea were in Secret Secret, and that they were always great. I saw like everything from tiny little bands at the Strawberry Hills, like the Hoodoo Gurus when they first started, and they're playing in a room that held 100 people, but they'd squash 200 in the bad old days. You know, Cold Chisel, a band I was in support of the Angels once. We thought we'd made it, but it didn't really work that way. But it was still a great night.
I'd love to have a time machine, and there's two different venues I would love to go back and see. Number one is Midnight Oil at the Antler, because everyone talks about the folklore of the sweaty sort of beer garden thing and the early days of the band. And even the Bondi Lifesaver and St. Chisel. You know, the two eras I missed, but I would have loved to have been there.
Yeah, it was a great time. I went to the Lifesaver quite a few times. I think I saw Chisel there once. I remember seeing it at the Sydney Cove Tavern as well. Yeah, I think Split Ends. And you could just go to a pub and see the Sports, Jojo Zep and the Falcons, you know, all those great Melbourne bands. And there was a great venue in the city called the Stage Door Tavern, which was kind of operating about the same time. And they used to, I think it was licensed to hold like 200 people, and they regularly put 1,000 in there. It was just insane. I saw XTC, the UK band there. The Stranglers played there. You know, it was just an insane time. A lot of those English bands at the time would come out to Australia because our live scene was so strong. They could come out and play the pubs and clean up. So The Cure, Simple Minds, Magazine, all these amazing sort of post-punk bands from the 80s, they all came out here and did pub tours the first time around. So you could go to the Family Inn at Rydalmere and see The Cure. Yeah. It's just nuts.
And even David Bowie, I know that he used to have a apartment in King's Cross, and he'd come and stay. Yeah. And sometimes he would just spur of the moment, go to the Northern Beaches and play an RSL.
It was a really classic time.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of, it's not coming back in the same way, but I think the live music scene is getting sort of more healthy. There's lots of great little venues around where I live. I'm in the inner west of Sydney, and just driving around, there's lots of great sort of grassroots venues. And Melbourne, we're in Melbourne on the weekend, and, Melbourne's rocking. It's a rock and roll town. It's great.
It's what I was hoping for post-COVID, because I thought, I reckon it's going to start a bit of a really good homegrown, kind of like a 80s pub era kind of era for Aussie music, and it seems to feel that way,
Our album's out on a label called Cheer Squad. Wally from the Meanies and Even runs it, and it's a great label, and he sent me his Spotify playlist that he puts out every now and then most of the acts on the label. And it's just so diverse, the number of like little bands I've never heard of, and then other people like Chris Wilson, who sadly passed away a few years ago, and Stephen Cummings' new album's out through that label. And that's just one label, and there's just so much happening out there. We played at Cherry Bar in Melbourne with two great bands on the weekend, one called the Hollow Majors, who do like a real sort of 70s, great rock and roll thing, and another group of girls called the Miffs, and they're both like fantastic bands. And sometimes on Facebook people say, oh, rock and roll's dead, there's no good rock bands anymore, and I just go, you just got to get out there, check it out.
It's what I say, have you seen Amel and the Sniffers? I mean, it's a thing. You got this great,
I know, they're insane.
It's so good.
Yeah, and the Chats and Bad Dreams, there's so many great rock bands, young rock bands coming up, and big, like, it's exciting. It's a new era.
And I can see why, you've excelled in becoming what you are, a massive music fan, a talented guitarist, and who would have thought you could mix the early learning skills with being in a band and forming the Wiggles. I mean, it's nuts, and now doing what you're doing now. Could you see yourself being in childcare and that sort of thing for all those years, or what have you got a bit bored and gone to rock and roll?
I taught for a couple of years, and I was teaching in university. I was teaching adults. And then in a demonstration preschool. So I think I probably would have ended up in academia, but, I wouldn't have swapped my life for the world. And that's not just because we did well financially. It was just such, it's been such an amazing experience. And what I'm loving is You know, I'm getting new experiences, which I didn't get to do with the Wiggles. Like last year we played Splendor in the mud and, you know, that was amazing. Fortunately, we were on the Sunday when the sun was out. There was still lots of mud. But
yeah, the OG tour like must that. Have been so fun for you guys. Cause,
yeah, well, we did that as well. Yeah, with the OGs, we did Falls Festival and, we did, you know, like the Entertainment Centre and Rod Laver kind of style venues and 15,000, 20-somethings. Had a few drinks and singing every song. So, yeah, great fun. So, look, I feel really fortunate that I can do that occasionally. So I haven't lost touch with that totally. And, you know, it kind of translates to what we're doing with the Soul Movers too. You know, at Cherry Bar the other night, the place was full of 20-somethings. It was people see us and think, oh, you know, you're an older bunch of guys. Well, some of us are young, but I'm not. And they expect, you know, everyone to be 50. But we get like 18 to 60s. You know, it's just great. And a lot of that's because of the Wiggles. They know about me because of the Wiggles. They come along and then they love the band. So
I'm going to have to ask you because it is kind of the premise for the podcast. the backstage rider. Now, how does your current backstage rider differ from, say, the Wiggles? Because you would have had a few beers in the Wiggles, Esky, I'm sure.
Not when we were playing for kids because we were playing during the day as well, yeah. You know. The latest shows we did usually were like a six o'clock show that we used to do in America. We used to do a 6 o'clock show and you'd have a few drinks afterwards, but now the rider over there, wouldn't be very exciting for most people in the Wiggles days. It was, you know, water and Gatorade and sandwiches and stuff, but it really varies with the Soul Movers. It's a bit more rock and roll. We quite often, you know, we usually have beers and wine and occasionally a bottle of vodka or something, depending on the size of the venue. At our level, it's usually just, you know, a few free beers over the bar. But most of the venues look after us. Yeah,
well, some of them even feed you. You know, give you a decent spread, which is which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we get fed quite often, and yeah, they're the venues you want to go back to.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. Well, it's so good talking to you, Murray. Thanks for all your time. And the first time I met you was standing at the front of Luna Park. I don't know what the gig was, but it must have been at the Big Top. That's the first time I saw you hanging around. I'm like, oh, yeah, off to a gig. And don't know what it was.
Might have been Nick Cave. I remember seeing him there.
Yeah, it might have been Nick Cave. But I didn't. Yeah. I haven't seen you around the scene a lot, and you're a great ambassador. And I'm so glad that you got this project. And you're having a lot of fun, and the new album is officially out now. So
yes, it is. Yep.
And go and buy it, damn it, because streaming's great, but the physical copy goes a long way.
Exactly. It's on CD and vinyl, coloured vinyl. Even we've gone that way. We love putting out the vinyl. A lot of people love it. And actually, at gigs, we tend to sell more vinyl than CDs, which is kind of interesting. But you can find us on Bandcamp. That's a good way to get it.
Good on you, Murray Cook. Thanks for your time, mate. And we will catch you on the road right now. Well, very soon. In fact, you're on the road at the moment, aren't you?
We are. Yeah. Look out for us.
Thanks, Murray. Great to talk
to you, mate.
What a legend, Murray Cook. I'll go out and say to my favourite Wiggle, he's a legend. And of course, check out Dumb Luck from the Soul Movers. It is out now, and the Soul Movers continue their Aussie tour. This is the Rider with Becca. Make sure you follow on whatever platform you choose to download from. And next week, it is a big one. The Silverchair book is out, but it's the story told by Ben Gillies and Chris Jahanu. It comes out this week, but next week, we catch up with Ben and Chris from Silverchair, Tuesday on The Rider with Becco. Catch you then.